Mike Absher is joining me, Marion Mayer, this morning. Hey, Mike, how have you been?
Good morning, Tom. We're doing well, thank you. Good. How about you?
Good. Got a ton of stuff I want to talk to you about.
One
of the things that we've been talking a lot about over the last week, 2 weeks, really, has been enforcement when it comes to, you know, the governor saying, what are you doing to keep the community safe? And call your mayors, call your city council and ask them what they're doing to keep you safe. I mean, there's been a lot of pressure from that quarter.
Yeah, there has, and there are no good answers to that, and it's a touchy subject. I can tell you that every mayor that I have talked to, and I've talked to many of them repeatedly, we are all struggling with how to figure out how to enforce these things. It's very unclear. There's not been a lot of guidance, if any guidance, really, from the state agencies, and I'm not throwing stones at them. This is a fact. It's not my opinion. They really haven't been enforcing it either, and they're supposed to take the lead in this and ask us for help when they need it, according to the governor's order. So this admonition to call mayors or councils and do that, it's really unfortunate. It's really not all that helpful in the bigger scheme of things, because there are no good answers to that. It's just a difficult situation all the way around. And you know, people, a vast majority of people are just tired of listening and hearing all of it anyway, so it wouldn't matter to some extent what we say or what I say or do. We're 8 months into hearing everybody's opinions and instructions, and there's just a certain amount of people that just are kind of tone deaf, I think, to some of it, and that's unfortunate too. But it's just that's a product of COVID fatigue, which is a real thing,
and no doubt about it. You know, after doing many interviews on enforcement and potential, it seems to, when I try to clear all the stuff away from it from around the side, that the fulcrum point of it is whatever county you live in, state's attorney's decision-making, because you could put your community and the officers, if you use law enforcement agents, in a liability position. I spoke with one mayor saying, look, I do this, that officer, we end up in court because we don't have the mechanisms for enforcement. We're charging, an attorney charges us $250 an hour to go out and protect us, and we lose. And we've got other law enforcement agents I've talked to that says, yeah, I'm personally liable. They can end up taking everything I want when it comes to some of this enforcement issue. The state's attorney, is that really the fulcrum point, Mike?
It is. I don't know. I'm not a legal expert. I'm sure you do remember, because I heard it on your show, but you remember Judge Lowry earlier on in the year talked about,
I do,
the takings clause. There hasn't been a whole lot of talk about that probably in public, but it's a real thing. Deprivation of property, in this case, you know, closing a business or something like that without due process of the law, is against the law. And that's a very real big question mark in this unprecedented time. And so, you know, we could literally talk about this for hours. I'm just going to make a comment to this. It wouldn't matter what was trying to happen, if the governor was trying to get something to happen that he thought was in our best interest, or a county or whatever. I mean, there's going to be people disagree with that vociferously and very loudly. And at the end of the day, really, the legislature should weigh in here. They're the ones that pass laws. And if we are struggling with the legalities of what the mechanisms that have been set forth, at this point, really, I'm disappointed that in these last 8 months, the legislature hasn't passed a law that we would all, at least we would all be playing under the exact same rules. We would know what statute to cite. We would know what the penalty was when we cited it. The state's attorney would know how to prosecute that. And your point is a very good one. It's not just up to a police officer or a city or a county or a health department to give somebody a warning or to write them a ticket. The justice system's much larger than that. And so when you know going in that it can't be really prosecuted up the chain, that's a problem. And it, frankly, in some respects, turns into more of a bullying tactic if you know it's not going to be prosecuted up downstream. And so that's why I say, really, if we wanted to solve this problem, let the legislature weigh in. They can pass a law that we all have to follow, whether we like that or not, and we can get past some of the accusations about, you know, that are specific to one person, like the governor or whatever. That's the way, in my opinion, it should work, and probably the only way some of this gets solved.
Yeah, it
was
interesting.
Practically speaking.
I was talking to Steve Fortini. He says they're nebulous, these rules. And I'm like, yeah, that really kind of identifies the problem. Hey, Mike, do you think there ought to be a mask mandate? Would your city council, do you think, support a mask mandate?
In principle, probably, or in theory. But here's, again, the issue. Enforcing everyone to wear a mask is kind of equates to stopping everyone that's speeding all at one time. It's practically not possible. From the enforcement standpoint, it's difficult to pass something that you know at the outset cannot be practically enforced. And I don't know of any jurisdiction anywhere, whether they've passed something or not, that's actually ticketing somebody for something. And so it's hard to say. I know that there's two towns, Carbondale and Murfreesboro, that have that. I've talked to Mayor Stevens quite a bit about his and what their ordinance states. And I personally don't see that whether we did or didn't, if it's based on those conversations with him, that it would have a meaningful effect one way or the other. And besides that, I know that there are some people not wearing masks. That's obvious, but I do think it's the minority of people, at least from my perspective when I'm out. So, but it's there again, that's one of those things. It's community by community, and everybody's going to fight about it and feel strongly about it one way or the other. And if we were to do that, I think the legislature ought to pass it, and we all have to live with it until this crisis subsides. If not, then people are adults and do get to make some of their own choices, whether those are good or bad choices, I suppose.
I want to change gears with you because there's a couple of other subjects that I've been watching, and I'm more than a little bit interested in them. One, did you already receive a bid, the City of Marion, to sell the Marion City Link?
We did, actually, at the last city council meeting, and we voted to accept that bid.
Okay.
We only received one. We advertised for it prior to that. We only received one bid.
Well, who got it, and what are they going to do with it?
Well, I'm not trying to deflect. I don't have who bought it in front of me right this second. I know who it is, but I don't know what the entity is. But it's somebody local, and my understanding is they want to make it into a private hunting club, which is good news. The city we haven't drawn water out of that lake and our reservoir in almost a quarter century. I think 23 years is the last time or so. And it does require lots of upkeep. There's about 500 acres out there. And, it was just sitting there, has been sitting there for a long time. We struggle to try to even do a minimum amount of maintenance and with it. And so hopefully that's what we were hoping for, if somebody else could take that and make it into something better and still conserve the area, so to speak, from an ecological standpoint. So that's what we think is going to happen there.
Well, that's interesting. And there was another item that has me interested, and I saw some rudimentary work, and I would assume there's some more. Maybe I just haven't seen it, that you've got a plan for this historic district in Marion. First off, can you define the location for the historic district and what your hopes, plans are for that district?
Sure. So if you're familiar with Marion at all, obviously the square, the tower, is sort of the focal point of that, but the north, south, east, and west boundaries are respectively Calvert Street to the north, which is basically where between Jackson and Gray Insurance and the high rise, that is the street that runs there. So that's the northern boundary of it. The post office on the east boundary of it, the library, or just a street north of that, basically on South Market, on the south boundary, and then the railroad tracks right before you get to Biasee Keyboard and Sound, as you're approaching from the west, going eastbound, that railroad track would be the western boundary, if you think of it as that. So that whole district is what we are applying for some, what they call ITEP. It's a Illinois Department of Transportation streetscape improvement grants and traffic flow, which is a big issue that we've got to tackle here. And then the city will be doing some more aesthetic improvements, some substantial aesthetic improvements all the way to in that downtown area. What I hope, yet to be determined, but I hope we can even bury the overhead power lines that are in that area. So it's everything from traffic flow to sidewalk to accessibility issues for the American Disabilities Act that we need to tackle, aesthetic improvements, and all the way to hopefully power lines. So with the square again being the focal point. And the point is not just to have a touchy feely, oh, it isn't this pretty, but we're trying to build up reasons for people to be here and stay here. And as I said, have said for a long time, including in my campaign for this office, I mean, you have to have people where you expect commerce to transact. And so we're going to create a much more walkable, entertaining, visually appealing area with historic significance and markers, just in other developments such as these murals that are popping up all over that area. And we are excited about it, and it's a 100-year renovation for downtown that hopefully makes it that much more relevant over the next 100 years.
You know what I hear, Mike, is interesting is perspective here on this, because as you drive through many communities in southern Illinois, you'll see the downtown is dead, but there's some place outside of town that seems to be the new place where all the commerce is. And sure, I can kind of see this as a preemptive strike on not allowing that to happen to the core of Marion. That you know, when we see it happen so many other places, well, then that's especially burying the power cables, for instance. Let's keep the place looking good. Let's think of the future, and let's protect our core.
Well, yeah, what you're describing there is really the tale of 200-year-old towns. I mean, that's just what happens. It's natural, and it's a natural progression. Interestingly enough, in Marion's sake, or in Marion's case, that really all happened 25-plus years ago with the development of the mall and all the development in the northwestern part of town. And interestingly, that part also fell into hard times, and the mall obviously in disrepair. So we've really got two major things to work on. Not only, I guess the best way to put something like that is you keep working on your future and never forget your past. And that's what we're really a duality there. We're trying to do at the same time. But as downtown, as it relates to downtown, there's something even more critical perhaps, is what I've described, that historic district. There's a lot of older residential neighborhoods that adjoin that naturally, and that's also a big part of our plan, is to re-energize and reinvest in those areas. And what a lot of people don't always calculate, I think, is that it's actually an economic development strategy, because if we all say we want to locate jobs here and new companies and thus far, but using Ison as an example, if we ever had, there's 2,200 employees out of Ison, if we ever had another chance at a big employer or something like that, we don't have the housing availability, Marion, presently to accommodate something like that. Those folks don't, you know, buy $200,000 houses. They need houses that are less expensive than that. We've got plenty of supply of that, but if they are in this older part of town and neighborhood. And so that's also a big part of what we're trying to re-energize, is the residential neighborhoods that are older and have really not been invested in for two or three decades. And so we're just as excited about that too.
So I always think about mission statements, things like that. And what I kind of hear, the historic district, the Marion Lake, and what's being done in the area where you just discussed, the opportunity, oasis of opportunity. What I'm seeing here is the effort to create that opportunity. I know that some people that's enigmatic, but if you see it, you see opportunity, people jump, right? There's always that percentage of people is ready to go. Is this really all these things you and I just talked about as a manifestation of the oasis concept?
Yeah, sure, absolutely. I mean, yes, that phrase that I have been using could very easily just be looked at as just a phrase, just like hub of the universe that we used to use and this kind of thing. But to me, it's my job. So we are trying to see, first of all, recognize where the opportunities exist, and secondly, to accentuate those things, every positive that exists, try to recruit people that are have that same kind of passion to reinvest in our town. And you're seeing that all over, not just out at the mall area, northwest part of town or west part of town, but you're seeing it downtown. Several of the buildings downtown have transacted, have sold.
Right.
And I think there's three current renovation projects going on right now. Some of them have already completed, like Crown Brew on Union Street, which is just one block north of the square. And it's exciting. So there's plenty of opportunity. It's just a matter of putting your energy where your mouth is, as opposed to just saying it.
Mike, before I let you go, something that's been on my mind a lot over the last few weeks, and that is food supplies for the elderly. I know I spoke with some of the people in Marion that you had okayed some extra expenditures to make sure those monies were there to help with seniors, especially with the additional pressure on the kitchens. I was wondering what the story is for Thanksgiving, however. I know that there was an annual dinner that was planned, and I believe that's been canceled, or there's been an alternate plan developed.
Yeah, unfortunately, and I've worried about this myself, Tom, you know, COVID's, this is a definite casualty of our situation at this point, and it's sad, but there are some efforts that are going on to try to make up for that canceled dinner. Heaven's Kitchen, really through the leadership of Jeff Diedrich here in town last year, fed 1,200 meals or so, I think, at the Pavilion in Marion. And that, just a month or so ago, we were still trying to figure out how to do that and do that remotely. But unfortunately, that's been canceled due to these circumstances. So there are some other programs that are being accentuated. I think the St. Joseph's Catholic Church Youth Group is going to be serving some to-go meals on Thursday, this Thursday. Thanksgiving. I think that's at 11:30 through 1 at the Marion Ministry Alliance, which interestingly is on Calvert Street, that northern boundary of the historic district that I just told you about.
Right.
I know Heron's Thanksgiving program, I've been told, is also canceled.
It so has been, yes.
That's awful. I think Harrisburg is serving a Thanksgiving meal as well from 3 to 6 on Wednesday at the First Presbyterian Church Annex. I think that's on Locust Street, but that's curbside and pickup only even there. So, and I know the Marion Elks, I think, are creating, getting some meals together for about 80 families and the Diedrich Foundation for about 100 families. And I think the Marion Ministry Alliance has been sort of the pivot point, if you will, for that, and distributing some vouchers for those pre-booked dinners that have maybe already been distributed. So we're trying, a lot of good people are trying to make up for it, but it's, I worry about that. I really do. That's always been such a good thing, a really good thing that the community does, and so many people take part in it, and it's sad that it can't take place this year, but that's where we're at.
Well, I spoke with Jill Graskowitz last week, and somebody had heard her on the air here with me, because she'd wanted to start a program that I'm familiar with in Carterville called Gumdrops, except for senior citizens. And somebody had heard us talking on the show, and the Kiwanis Club had donated $500, Marion Kiwanis Club, towards the weekend meal program. And I'm hoping that some other people will be chipping in to help out. Because their idea is that, you know, every weekend, able to put things together for elderly people who may even have problems cooking at home, easily cooked, nutritious items that'll carry them through until Monday, because she sees people coming in on Monday and they cut their lunch in half and take that home for dinner. And when you offer them more, so we've got more, they say, no, you'll need that for other people, I'll be fine. And that type of mentality and what's going on in Southern Illinois has garnered my attention, as I'm sure it has yours. And as Jill had told me, you had to help them be able to, well, help more people. So pretty excited about that.
Yeah, but Jill is our new director at the Senior Citizen Center. And, you know, we were really, really worried with COVID and with lots of our facilities in Marion, from the Civic Center, Boynton Street, Pavilion, and Senior Citizens, what's our business model? What are we going to do? And interestingly, they have served more meals out of the Senior Citizen Center per day since this all started than they ever did before, by a pretty large margin. And so Jill's really a rock star and has come up with a lot of innovative things. And I'm so proud that the Senior Citizen Center is still able to provide, like you said, a really pretty essential service to our seniors. And just like when we're on the economic front, when we are developing new things, we can't forget our past and can't be derelict in the old parts of town. Just we cannot also forget those that need the most help from us. And it's always a struggle. It's always a lack of not enough resources to do that. But I'm certainly proud of the Senior Citizen Center. I'm proud of the organizations you just mentioned that are stepping up and trying to fill these all-important gaps for meals in people's lives, and that's all good. And on this Thanksgiving week, I'm very thankful for it.
Yeah, and it's interesting when I think about those people you're talking about. They're the ones who built the town.
Absolutely.
You know, and absolutely. So there is a responsibility discharge there. Marion Mayor Mike Absher. Mike, as always, it's a privilege. Last thoughts on what we're facing Thanksgiving and your community. Final thoughts today. We've got about 30 seconds, Mike.
I just think everybody's got to be vigilant for a little while longer. I saw in the news this morning there's yet now a third vaccine with 90% plus effectiveness that's going to be available in large quantities. So now that brings us up at least to three. And I know there's literally dozens more companies that are on the cusp of it. So the cavalry is coming, so to speak, like they keep saying on TV. But that's not a good time to let your guard down, so to speak. You still have to protect your health and protect your family. But, the future still is looking bright in this year of all years. And I pray for our town. I pray for you, Tom. I know you're struggling with some of these issues, too. Everybody's got COVID fatigue. We've been immersed in it for so long. My best advice is to find the people that you're thankful for out there this week and go out of your way to thank them. And bring some joy into their lives and yourself for being thankful.